Hello, welcome back to Globe Talks, a podcast designed to encourage and strengthen our church family one conversation at a time. My name's Anahi and I'm working as a ministry trainee for the Globe Church this year. Today, I'm joined by Jonty and Lizzie to chat about our climate. Thank you guys for coming on the podcast to help us think through this topic. Let's begin with a brief introduction of you guys. Do you want to start, Jonty?
Yep, I'm Jonty. I'm a pastor of the Globe Church. And I studied chemistry many years ago. So kind of the science and the relationship between science and faith, those things really matter to me. And I think understanding science carefully and properly and relating well to science, I think is very important for us as Christians.
And I'm Lizzie. I'm a civil servant and I've been working on international climate change negotiations for the UK government. I'm now working on a programme to stop deforestation in developing countries.
Wow.
So interested in this from my work perspective.
Yeah. That sounds really interesting.
And you're sort of, isn't it that you're offering, there's a scheme, isn't there, to help countries afford to not deforest?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, so brilliant.
We're trying to set up a program to enable forest countries to have a better option than chopping down their trees by getting payments from both businesses and governments do that well.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Because just the type of research I was doing beforehand, it seems like the economic side is what sometimes limits some of these countries from being more environmentally friendly. So that's really cool to kind of have a little insight into what you do. So as we start this conversation, I want to just acknowledge upfront that when it comes to talking about our climate or the environment, there will be a range of views that are held by people in our church family. I suspect that there will be some of us who hold this topic really close to their hearts, whereas others might not care that much. And then, of course, there'll be some of us who are somewhere in the middle. If you find yourself closer to the I don't really care about this camp, can I implore you to continue listening as we have this discussion? Because our prayer and our hope is that regardless of where we're starting from, this will be a conversation that convicts, teaches and encourages us. So, Lizzie, can you just give us a little insight into, I know you mentioned a little bit with your work, but what is your motivation to work on climate change issues?
Yeah, so I think there's lots of good reasons to work on climate change as a Christian. I think there are two main reasons that I find motivating. One of them is our call to steward the earth as humans, and the fact that governments and organisations can help us to do that well and to do that together. And secondly, our call to care for the vulnerable in society, because we don't often realise, but climate change and environmental issues often affect the most vulnerable the most on a global scale and also on a more local scale. So it's a good way of loving our neighbour as well.
So Jonty, as we start thinking about this, of all the things that we could be talking about as Christians, why should we engage in the conversation about the environment, which is gaining lots of traction in our society?
I think we should care about this because it's the world we live in and it's the world that God made and we love him and so we should love his world. But I also think it's a question that's gaining traction in our world. I think our culture is talking about it. So I think we need to have thought about it. I think we need to be able to join in that conversation. It's a brilliant place to start a conversation about what we believe. Because fundamentally, it really goes to the heart of what it means to be human, what it means to live in this world. Because it seems to me if you start with the Bible, this question around the environment is really a question about the relationship between human beings and the planet. Mm-hmm. That how do they relate to one another? And taking God out of the picture for a second, that question has sort of captivated humanity for all of history. This is not a new thing. Human beings have always known that the planet matters. And that's come out in all sorts of pagan kind of religion. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of Mother Earth is this idea that we depend on the Earth. Mm-hmm. We depend on this planet. And so it's often led humanity to a worship of this planet because we can see that we need it and we depend on it. And we worship the sun and we worship the rain because that makes the crops grow. So interestingly, I think humanity has always had an inclination to worship the environment. And I think then on the flip side, we've also always had an inclination to abuse this environment. It's a weird thing that goes on. So, and so you end up with this tension between, we know that we depend on this planet, and yet we treat this planet like it's a resource that we exists for us to exploit and to get whatever we want. And so at various points in human history, we've engaged with the planet in those two ways, I think, worship or exploitation. And that's been true all over the place. There's been many times in history when the human beings have exploited the planet. It's just that now we live in a day when the technology is such that we are able to exploit the planet to such an extent that we're able to do far more harm than we ever were before. So I don't think it's that suddenly we've become more selfish. I think human beings are always chopping down trees and always overfishing and always, you know, doing that stuff. But if you only had a small net, then there's a limit to how many fish you could catch. If you've now got technology that enables you to empty the ocean, mm-hmm. now you've got a problem. But it's the same issue, right? Mm-hmm. And so you end up with this kind of interesting relationship between humanity and the world. We've always understood that that exists. What happens when you read the Bible is that you discover that there is a different relationship between humanity and the world, mm-hmm. that we stand in a different position than we think we do. And that position is that this world is a beautiful creation of a masterful creator God. God is not part of this creation.
Yeah.
He is not the sun or the moon or the stars or the earth. He is outside and above and beyond and transcendent to this creation. And he is the source of this creation. So it all comes from him. And he created this world and then put human beings in this world to steward it, to care for it, to protect it, to love it, to nurture it, to enjoy it. See, even before everything went wrong in our world, right back in Genesis 1 and 2, there's still this sense that the world needs humans to cultivate it, that it's going to... It needs to be... looked after and stewarded. And so you take the raw materials and you're supposed to do stuff with them and use them. And, you know, like a musician takes different notes or an artist takes different colored paints and then creates. That's what we're, you know, God has created this world for us to take and use. And so technology and art and music and science, they're all part of being stewards of this world. So that's the relationship that we're supposed to have with this world. So not to worship the planet, but to worship the creator of the planet. But instead, what human beings did was rejected that beautiful role and instead placed themselves at the center and instead began to exploit the planet, began to use the planet for our own good rather than seeking to care for the planet.
Yeah, and I think we have all seen the results of that exploitation. We're really aware of it. We see it on our headlines. But I wonder, Lizzie, can you just help us think through some of the key areas in which our planet is up against some of the results of this exploitation? I just wondered, in your work, have you come across any key figures or you could help us think through some of that?
Yeah, so I guess when we talk about climate change, as we see it in the news everywhere, we're talking about the particular kind of exponential increase in the world's temperature since the Industrial Revolution. And it's interesting that John T was talking about, I guess, the moment when technology has enabled to do this at the scale that it is done. And so it's mostly kind of the need for energy and the need for the kind of patterns in human consumption and globalization that have really driven a lot of the exponential increase in this. And that means that temperatures are now on average 1.1 degrees warmer than they were at the end of the 19th century. And so that has had impacts on sea level rise, on ice caps. It has impacts on extreme weather events that we see in the news more and more. And it also has a lot of impacts on people around the world. Things like our infrastructure that aren't built for the kind of increase in temperature. And we'll probably see more of those challenges as we go forward. But there are a lot of people also working on kind of solutions. How do we actually think about different ways of producing energy, different ways of consuming, different ways of, I guess, managing the resources that we've got. And interestingly, I saw something that said that we're currently consuming as if we had 1.6 planet Earths, as opposed to having one planet Earth.
Yes, that's brilliant. No, that's not brilliant. That's bad. But I was thinking earlier, trying to think, what does Jesus say about climate change, right? Because obviously he doesn't explicitly mention climate change. But one of the stories I was drawn to, and it just fits with what you just said, is the story of the rich fool. So, and it kind of exposes the really the heart of the problem around climate change. So the story is in Luke 12, and Jesus asked this question about greed. But he says, the ground of a certain man yielded an abundant harvest. So harmony between, you know, this is great. This is an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. There I'll store my surplus grain. So the instinct in the human heart is to gather and store and get more and more and more. Because the human heart is selfish. And actually, what in many ways that man, well, I think what that man should have done is said, I have no, what should I do? I have no place to store my crops. I'll use this to feed those who don't have enough food. I'll use this to care. I'll use this to be generous. But I think this is really the problem, isn't it? That technology is not a bad thing. You know, the Industrial Revolution, that's not a bad thing. It's just that the human heart is so obsessed with getting more that it will use those bigger nets just to fish the seas empty, use those bigger barns just to store more and more. And so I think, you know, Jesus is really pushing us into this, showing us the heart of our problem. We just constantly want more.
Yeah, and I think we really feel that tension that, I mean, at least I can look around and be like, oh, that corporation over there is not caring about how they recycle or, you know, whatever. I guess as an individual, there can be a lot of grief in looking and being like, there's nothing I can do as an individual with this really big problem. And I feel like having conversations with some of the people a bit younger than us, feeling a real like outcry and like, why isn't anyone doing anything? We want to make people listen, all that kind of stuff. So I just wondered, is there anything that policymakers are doing or can do who have a bit more power to like restrain some of this greed? Is any of that happening?
Yeah, I guess governments around the world have realised that this is a big issue. I mean, it's a big issue for the environmental impact that it will have. It's a big issue for the human impact it will have. It's also a huge economic issue globally. Like the idea of changing how we power our modern lives, with more and more countries wanting to develop to the standard of living that obviously we have in the West, fairly so. It's like, it's a huge moral question too. Like, where are the resources going to go? Who are they going to go to? So governments have come together, and you might have heard of the Paris Agreement, which was signed in 2015, which is basically everyone signed up to the UN climate change treaties has said, okay, we're going to do something about this. And so they're thinking about how can we reduce emissions? How can we help people adapt to the impacts of changing temperatures? And how can we finance this? How can developed countries help developing countries to do this? So there is lots of kind of global work going on. I was once given this picture of a kind of, well, action on climate change being like a convoy in the sea. And you have like the big heavy ship that needs to be going in the right direction. And that's kind of the slow government kind of focus processes. But then you also need the kind of speedboats making sure that they're pulling the ship in the right direction as well. And they might be testing out innovative ways of solving things. They might be kind of challenging the status quo. And they might be your businesses or your activists. And then you also need those looking over the horizon, like where are we actually going, and doing some of the research and the thinking. So I think there is a role for lots of different actors in society to engage on this. You do need policymakers to be engaged on this. But there's all kinds of ways of getting involved in thinking about this and of implementing that heavy ship, which does need to go in the right direction, but that needs to be influenced by those around it.
I'm really intrigued by. So you've been to COP 27 and 26
And
as well.
28 was the last one.
I was also, I'm so out of date with my COPs. What actually happens? What I mean, you're there as a negotiator. What does a day look like? I'm just intrigued.
It was the
intel. It's quite an amazing setting, to be honest, because there's 190 something countries signed up to these agreements, and so you've got people from literally every corner of the earth coming together. So it's an amazing multicultural space where you're just rubbing shoulders with people that you would never see in day-to-day life or otherwise. So it's a really interesting atmosphere in that sense, a great atmosphere because there are people who are working towards the same goal. And I think there is something kind of unique about the climate change negotiations as opposed to other big international treaties that might be on security or on other issues, because everyone is kind of aiming towards the same thing. There are very few actors in this space that are actually not acknowledging what the science is, and therefore everyone is interested in what the solutions look like. There's obviously a lot of debate about what that looks like and who's best placed to do what and where the money comes from specifically. But it's a really motivating environment in that sense. And yeah, then you have basically all kinds of conversations all happening in parallel, probably about 30 formal negotiations happening in parallel every day, often going into the early hours of the morning. And the main kind of action happens in the corridors outside in the dining rooms where people are actually having the conversations about where are the compromises. So you have the formal stuff happening on the mic in the room, but a lot of the stuff does rely on personal relationships being built, trust being built, and solutions being found kind of ad hoc. On top of that, you've got all of the rest of the world that comes to a COP. So your businesses, your NGOs, politicians that fly in for a day. So lots of things going on, and it's really multicolored and a fascinating place to be.
Sounds incredible.
Actually, because it's interesting, it's a fine. I find myself listening and thinking, there's a part of me that thinks this is terrific, right? Humanity taking seriously this issue, and then there's a part of me that thinks, but there's also a problem that there's a sort of a pride and arrogance in humanity that says we can fix this, and it's a funny thing, isn't it? This,
There's a desperation to it as well.
yes, yeah. But it's and it's the motivations, what motivates people. So like you got the people in COP, and then you got Extinction Rebellion on the streets, and you think, what is motivating you to seek for change? And I think, if you listen to Greta Thunberg or whoever else, a lot of it is the two big motivations, I think, are guilt and fear. So how dare you act like this? I'm a 16-year-old girl and you're destroying our planet for the future. And how dare you? You should feel ashamed of yourself. You should feel guilty about what you've done. And the world's going to burn. We're all going to burn. The house is on fire. Panic. And it seems to me that those two motivations are often, it's like you're saying about desperation, that humanity knows there's a problem. It can see there's a problem. It comes together to try to fix the problem. But then you get the latest figures about ocean temperatures rising. I think it was last week, and they're f rising faster than they thought. And you're like, there comes a point where humanity's going to need to say, we're screwed. We can't do this. I mean, it's a funny. So you want to keep working at it, but there needs to be a humility that goes alongside that says, we need God.
And I feel like I oftentimes swing between that pendulum of like fear and guilt, and then just been like, oh well, there's doom and there's fear, and you're kind of just swinging between the both. So as a Christian, is there hope to be found?
Yes. Surprise, surprise. I mean, this is why I think it's so beautiful. This is why I think we should be engaging with this. Because Christians of all people have a better motivation to care for this planet. So we know the God who made the planet. He loves us. He sent his son to die for us. We've all exploited the planet. We've all exploited other people. Jesus came to die to forgive us. Because we've not just sinned against the planet, we've sinned against God, right? So Jesus comes, he dies for us, he restores us, and now we love the God who made the planet. And so I want to do my best for this planet because I love God, right? And not only do I love God, so I'm not driven by guilt, I'm driven by love. I also have huge hope because God has a plan for this world. We haven't got time to get into all this. But part of the big, I think part of the big debate that happens around this for Christians is your view of what happens in the future. Because if you think this world is just going to all kind of like be chucked away and we're going to get this, all go to heaven and float around and have a happy time, there's a little motive. Why would I care about this world? It's all dying. Let's just tell everyone about Jesus and try and get them all to heaven. But the Bible says, no, that's not God's plan. God has a plan for this world. He has a future for this world. It's going to be made new. It's going to be renewed. It's going to be transformed. And therefore, as I love this planet and seek to care for this planet, I'm driven by hope, not fear. And I think those twin motivations then of love and hope are the answer to the weak motivations of guilt and fear. So guilt and fear will get you to do something, right? We'll all, guilt and fear will always motivate you to do something, but love and hope will definitely motivate you to do more.
That's fantastic. Thank you. That's really helpful.
I guess as working on this as well, there is something that really helps me when I think, oh gosh, this is in quite a bad state, or how are we ever going to get governments to work together efficiently and effectively in time to do something about this? But I think, that reminding myself that this isn't ultimate. It's not, it's not what God has in store, and it's not out of his control. Is really reassuring. It kind of gives the freedom to work on it, hopefully, but work on it diligently as well, as you say, without not taking it seriously, but knowing that ultimately we're not the ones in charge of solving this.
Yeah, and hopefully then being distinctive, because people go, Lizzie, you don't seem to be as completely freaked out as I am. Well then,
hopefully. Yeah, that's great. So just as we sort of draw this conversation to an end, I'm just thinking of that Christian person who has not maybe engaged with this that much in the past, but is feeling compelled to make some changes. What are some of the ways that we can respond to this?
Something that really helps me to think about how to respond on a personal level is to think a bit more, not just about what God has given me, but also how he's provided it. Because so much of the time we're focused on what I have, what I don't have. And that's the way, I guess, consumerism and the way that we abuse the planet is where it starts, in our hearts. So I think I'd find it helpful to kind of reflect on how has God provided this. And so when I look at the food that I'm eating, I'm thinking, actually, where has it come from? The clothes that I'm buying, what has had to happen in order to make these? How much energy am I using? And I think one of the impacts of, I guess, the Industrial Revolution we've been talking about has been a separation between us as humans and the earth around us and nature and all of the things that kind of enable our life. And there's many good things about that. Things are much easier. I don't need to spend hours making my own clothes. But it's also, I think, been to the detriment of us really kind of being in tune with how God works in his world. And like things like the seasons don't really matter for the food that I can get in Sainsbury's. And so I think trying to recognise, what has had to happen for God to provide this to me really helps to then go and think of what I might do in response.
That's really helpful, because I think sometimes consumerism can just feel like you're on a conveyor belt and it's just rushing in one direction and feels like you can't really do much to slow it down. But consciously thinking and thanking God for the food, not just like, you know, saying a prayer beforehand, but as you were saying, going through the grocery store and thinking about where the food's come from and your clothes and stuff like that, I think doing that can help with the greed issue as well. And just this sort of endless drive towards more and more and more things. That's helpful.
Yeah, I think I think it's exactly right. I think it is partly just consuming less, isn't it? I mean, you know, if but I want to keep saying, let's consume less as an act of worship to God, as a, and every time I choose, yeah, every time I remember to take my water bottle, I'm saying, Father, I'm doing this because it's your world, and I don't want to spoil your world. You know, that everything becomes an act of worship, not a sort of, oh, I feel so guilty, but I love you, and I, you sent your son to die for me, and here's a small way. And I think we can turn small things into worship, and then small things become habits, and then habits become lifestyles, and then lifestyles really begin to change beyond us. And so I'm way back on this. You know, I'm wanting to learn how to worship God in the way that I use stuff.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, that it is an act of worship. And also, I think it's an act of trust, because in sort of using what God has given me and not wanting to hoard and gather more, it's showing that I trust that God will provide for my daily needs.
Yeah, which makes it overflows in generosity.
And we see loads as well in the way that God kind of puts his laws in place for the Israelites in the Old Testament, that he weaves rhythms into it, and that applies to how they interact with creation, like how they tend their crops. And there's a pattern, and there's rest. For example, when he talks in Leviticus about harvesting the crops for a number of years and then having a rest year. And I think, it would really benefit us to kind of take a step back and think about how are we engaging with the way that the world is designed to function, the way that God has put those rhythms in place. And that affects things like where we get our food from at different times of the year. And so all of this, I think, could be really helped by having a bit more of an awareness of our relationship with the planet as God created us to have it.
Yeah, because so much of what we do is really, when we stop and think about it, is driven by convenience, selfishness, you know, what makes my life easy. And I think we need to call it out a bit more as a sin, you know.
And it's immediate as well. We always want things now. And I suppose the way that life is designed is to get us what we want as quickly as we can get it. And actually, God often calls us to wait as well. And that's kind of built in to how nature works too.
And what an opportunity to live distinctive, kind of like how we started, how Christians are uniquely placed to have this conversation, because we have a God who loves the world. So in the way that we are loving the world, we're loving him. And I'm just, really excited and challenged by how, by treating the world and not exploiting it, being a good steward, actually that is a great way to live distinctively.
What do you say? I do think it's really important, you know, when I say that there's sort of pride in humanity coming together, that we think we're going to save the planet. We're not going to save the planet. Only God's going to do that. But it is also a good thing that humanity wants to come together and do something. So, you know, I think it's brilliant that Christians are involved in this stuff, and you need to have Christians at COP and engaging with understanding the science and engaging with this, but doing so as an act of worship to God, and therefore being distinctive about how they act. So I think it's, I don't want to say it's a waste of time, shouldn't be COP is a waste of time. It's not, but it's not the answer.
Thank you guys so much. That's been massively helpful. Thank you for your insights. And I'm aware that there's so much more to be said, but for the sake of time, we should draw this discussion to a close. However, I'm just wondering, are there any resources that you can point people to if they want to do a bit more thinking on this? I can always pop some stuff in the show notes afterwards as well.
I've got to admit, I haven't read a huge amount on this. There's a very short little book by a guy called Dave Gobbett, published by the Good Book Company, called The Environment. It's very entry level. But for someone who wants to start thinking about it, it kind of takes a Bible overview approach to understanding some of the stuff I was saying earlier about our relationship with the world. But that might be an interesting place to start. But to be honest, I would talk to people about it. There are some people at Globe who are really, really good at this. And I just want to encourage you to talk to them. Yeah. You know, why not have conversations? And when you hear about somebody who's doing something, go, oh, that's interesting. Mm. You know, how do you do that? Why do you do that? And let's talk about that. I think we're just too slow to just learn from each other and grow together as a community.
Mm-hmm. And I guess having this podcast is just the start of these conversations. So yeah, as Jonty said, please continue chatting to each other. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you've been encouraged and strengthened. Join us again next time for our next conversation. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.